Hello, I'm Dr. Ralph Sullivan, RCGP Clinical Champion for Patient Online, and welcome to our third Patient Online podcast. We'll be talking about GPs, nurses and patients and how they can use Patient Online record access as end-of-life care. I have with me Dr. Imran Khan, College Clinical Support Fellow and GP, and Dr. Sinead Clark, GP Advisor to Macmillan Cancer Support. Imran, could you kick us off, please, by telling us who may benefit from this podcast and what we are hoping people will be able to learn from it.
So this podcast is for GPs, practice nurses, really anybody involved in providing end-of-life care to patients. This podcast is going to go through some of the reasons you may recommend Patient Online to patients and their carers, how we can use Patient Online safely and effectively in providing that care, how GP data quality and record quality can impact that care. And we're going to talk a little bit about health literacy and why patient-coded records can improve how patients' understanding of their own care. We're going to talk a little bit about care planning and some of the more complex coordination systems like EPACs. And we're going to talk about proxy access and what proxy access implies for families and carers.
Thank you very much, Imran. Could you get us started now on the podcast by giving us an overview of Patient Online and what it offers for perhaps the listeners who are not so familiar with what Patient Online is?
Patient Online, I think, can be seen in two categories. Firstly, the what lots of people assume is the more traditional part of Patient Online, which is booking and cancelling appointments, ordering repeat medications, and then there's what we consider the second part of Patient Online, which is the access to the detailed coded records and extended record access, which includes all the correspondence, but mainly the care record.
Okay, so the coded record, these are read codes entered into the patient's record by the practice. Could you tell us a little bit about why information should be coded in support of end-of-life care?
Often templates are used to code information and improve some of the data quality in end-of-life care. Lots of people use care records, which are often template-driven. So it encourages a sort of uniform information entry of coded information, which are then used to build summaries in the patient record and can then be used in more complex systems, such as the EPAC systems. But usually this data is in a form that is displayed in the patient's own detailed care record or coded record that they can see using Patient Online.
And how can patients use Patient Online in their end-of-life care?
Well, when patients are in the end-of-life or end-of-life care setting, they tend to be heavy users of care. They tend to be have increased numbers of prescriptions, so they'll tend to be using repeat medications. So they can use Patient Online to do all those sorts of things, order repeat prescriptions. They often have multiple medications, so they can do all of that online. They can use the care record itself to access their own care coded information, which means patients are more informed about what's on their records and more informed about their care and their conditions. This in turn leads to increased health literacy, and it promotes a more well-informed patient and their carers to be more well-informed, and it allows them to share those decisions more fully. It also empowers them to take a more active role in managing their own care if they know exactly what's in their record and what's been discussed and recorded on their record itself.
And Sinead, from your viewpoint as a GP advisor to Macmillan, what does good end-of-life care really look like?
Yeah, so I think there's a number of principles that would describe good end-of-life care for patients, and this is based on what patients and their relatives tell us, as well as professionals. Number one tends to be that people want coordinated and collaborative care. They want to only have to have difficult conversations potentially once, and they then want their preferences and that information shared widely rather than having to have the conversations again. And they want everybody who's providing care for them to be communicating with each other and to know what their wishes are and what the plan is for their care. A lot of people would like really good shared decision making at the end of life, so that should always be an option for all patients that want it. They feel they're equals in that decision making and are empowered to take a big part in the decisions that are made. Timely information is incredibly important, so everyone being able to see completely up-to-date information about what's happening to the patient and their preferences, very, very important. That includes in and out of hours for health professionals. People want personalised care planning, so they want plans that are completely personalised to them and their situation and their carers and family as well. Access to information at the point of care is another one. So we need people who are caring for patients at the end of life to be able to get information about them straight away from where they are in that particular care setting. And, you know, most patients will want their family and carers involved. And for somebody whose preferred place of care is to be cared for and or die at home, that's particularly important, as family and carers will be the main people helping to make that happen, and they need to be fully involved in that person's care and the decision making around it.
I understand that the RCGP, along with Marie Curie, have recently developed and are piloting a set of standards for end-of-life care. They call them the Daffodil Standards. Yes. How would Patient Online contribute and support the implementation of the Daffodil Standards, Sinead?
Yeah, I think that Patient Online contributes to quite a number of the standards, actually. So the first main standard is about professional and competent staff. And of course, staff can't fully care for patients and their whole family if they don't have up-to-date relevant information about them. So that's number one. Number two, early identification. Again, this is all about identifying that people are nearing the end of life and then being able to have the conversations at the right time and coding them correctly on the notes so that they can be shared with everybody, including the patient and their relatives. Carer support is mentioned as the third one. Again, we've talked a bit, and we're going to talk a bit later about how proxy access can be given to carers to access somebody's care record to help them to be aware of what's going on and to help coordinate someone's care. Seamless planned coordinated care sort of speaks for itself, really. The more we can better code information and share it with all the relevant people, the more likely we'll be able to provide this for patients and their families. Assessment of unique needs of the patient. So that's about, again, personalised care planning, which I mentioned before, and making sure we're really focused on what matters to the patient and what's relevant to them. Quality care during the last days of life. Well, the best way to help ensure that happens is to be sharing the right information with everybody. Care after death, very important. And also that general practices are hubs in compassionate communities. And compassionate communities is all about everybody in that community being able to pull together to care for everybody else, really. And again, information sharing for the people that are important to that patient will help everyone to pull together and support them properly. So I would say that all of those standards can be supported by good information sharing and patient online access.
You've mentioned care planning, Sinead. Part of the reason for care planning and end-of-life care is to have everything in place for emergencies that arise. Care is not always scheduled. Unscheduled care is a major part of end-of-life care. So, could you explain how Patient Online contributes to planning for future care of the patient?
Absolutely. So, yes, absolutely. Most hours in the week are what we'd call out of hours, or, you know, unplanned hours. And especially for patients who are getting near the end of life, their condition can become very unpredictable, and they are very big users of unplanned care, understandably. So there's two aspects to that. The first aspect is that if patients can have more access to their records, they can have a more active contribution to the care plans that are put in place to make sure they're accurate and up to date, and that they have been instrumental in saying what the plan should be, what they want. And then the other aspect is then accessing that information out of hours, which is when most unplanned care happens, basically, for these patients. And if they have access to their patient records, if they are with someone who can't access them through their own systems, they would be able to give somebody proxy access to their information. So that might be an A&E doctor, that might be a paramedic turning up at their house, would be able to see that information about them if they gave them access, and that would allow them to hopefully coordinate their care better, and they'd be more likely to follow their wishes. So I think there's the in-hours planning, which Patient Online gives them more contribution to, and there's the out-of-hours access that this potentially gives people with the patient's permission.
In many areas, but not all areas of the country, there is a data sharing system in place, which is commonly known as EPACs. They all have their own local names, but they are EPACs systems. And these systems include coded data taken from the GP record regularly. And so those codes are the codes that the patient will be able to see online. So how does Patient Online fit in where EPAC systems are in operation? And in fact, in a large part of the country where there is no EPAC system, or it is implemented only partially?
Yeah. So I think the real key about EPACs is this is coded data, as you've said. And that's the real power of putting coded data into your system. As soon as this data is coded, it's easier to share within your local IT systems, whether that's called EPACs or not. And of course, then if your patient has online access, they can see the data because you've coded it properly. Otherwise, if you freehand it in, they're not necessarily going to be able to see it depending on what access they have. So I think EPACs coding is very, very important. It's very important for patient online access to that. And then, of course, your patient can and carers can communicate with the GP surgery then if they see something that needs updating or changing. So you stand the best chance of that data being completely up to date if it's done with the health professionals and the patient and their carers in conjunction. Then the different EPAC systems, obviously, some of them allow other people to view that record. Some of them pull that coded data into another system. But the absolute key is if it's coded properly, patient online, patients will be able to see it. And that's what's important for the care. I think if there is no EPAC system at all, it's possibly even more important. You do require then in the GP surgery to make sure you're coding this information. And most GP systems have templates that you can use to do this so that you're all coding it the same way. And then if that's done consistently, then if the patient is somewhere with a health professional who doesn't have access to that data because there isn't an EPAC system, the patient can actually choose to open up that information themselves. They can do it on the smartphone if they've got access, or on a computer, or that most GP systems will allow a code to be given with the patient's permission to another healthcare professional so that they're able to access that information. So the bottom line is, whether you've got EPACs or not, if you've coded it properly on your GP system, then Patient Online can really, really enhance your EPAC system. And if you don't have EPACs, can actually really help with information sharing when it's needed.
Imran, we've talked a lot in this podcast about the benefits of providing patient line access to not just the patient, but to family members, to their carers, and in certain circumstances, to other healthcare professionals involved in the care. We call this proxy access. But we need to know how to do it safely and effectively. Could you tell us a little bit more about this particular special aspect of Patient Online?
Sinead mentioned a number of times how important it was to support carers and their family to enable the services, and that those services include the Patient Online services. So it can be helpful for carers and their family members to have online access to the patient's GP record and the other transaction services, including be able to order repeat prescriptions, make appointments, and for them to and maybe to access that more detailed information that's held on their record on the patient's behalf. And this is called proxy access. There are various different types of proxy access, which are categorised as either formal or informal access. The formal methods being situations where the patient themselves have a set of credentials or usernames and passwords to log on to their own patient online record, and the carer or relative is given a different set of credentials that identifies them specifically as a proxy to the patient's record itself, and that's formal access. Where informal access is where the patient themselves simply shares their own username and password with their carer or relative. The formal methods are obviously they're vendor dependent. Lots of the systems in place at the moment do have it, but some don't. But these are issues that will be resolved over time as patient online becomes more prevalent and more widely used. We focus mainly on those formal aspects because it's more auditable. It's safer. It's more effective, and it protects the patient to a certain degree. And it also allows different levels of access to be given to the proxy that the patient may want or not want, as the case may be. We've talked about capacity, and that often patient online can be used in an end of life. But in order for that to happen, somebody would have to be able to use those services on the patient's behalf when the patient deteriorates, or to have capacity implications. And in order to do that, they would have to authorise that proxy. In areas where the patient doesn't have capacity, then it may be more important to have that discussion early, because they would have to authorise that proxy access beforehand, before it becomes more difficult, before it has to be a decision that's made in the patient's best interest, which may be more difficult for the clinician, it may be more difficult for those involved in their care, and raises some of the more difficult questions about what access to give and who to give it to. Whereas if those decisions are made early, then the patient can give that access, and then the issue doesn't become a problem in itself. It can be quite a complicated issue if it's done late, but there's lots of guidance from the RCGP already on proxy access, and much more details available on the RCGP toolkit.
Well, I'd like to thank Imran Khan and Sinead Clark for the informative and interesting information about Patient Online. We hope we've given you an insight in how Patient Online can contribute quite significantly to end-of-life care. In particular, how good quality coded information within the record can contribute to significant information sharing, both with the patient, with their carers, and with all the health professionals who are looking after the patient. It empowers the patients to take an involvement in their care, and it means that so many of those difficult decisions can be made once and the outcomes shared with everybody concerned. And it makes sure that health professionals have access to the patient's preferences when they need them, and they can then make sound, solid decisions that will implement the patient's preferred choices. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.